Chief Officer and founder for Moon to Mars. So maybe Jordan, you want to talk a little bit about what you do and how you guys work together?
Sure. So I basically head up revenue at Cloud9, so trying to procure partners for the company. I came into this job. My brief history, I worked at ESPN over 20 years ago and was there kind of during the renaissance of ESPN when we went from a sports focused network, sports center, Major League Baseball, all the sports and information, ESPN News, and kind of shifted into storytelling. Right around the time where Sports Century came about, we started ESPN Original Entertainment. Obviously, we got the NBA contract during that time. But a lot of the shows that are a foundation of the network today started back then, pardon the interruption, Around the Horn, what have you. Then I worked a little bit more in the entertainment industry and then left it all together for about a decade, focusing on bringing brands into a new marketplace, brand expansion. So I focused on specifically bringing brands to the Middle East and the Gulf. Very interesting experience there, helping fashion and automotive and hospitality brands relocate or just expand their presence on a global landscape. About a few years ago, I was sitting down and had a chat with Jack, who's the founder of Cloud9, and he was looking to expand our footprint. We wanted to get more non-endemic brands to come on board. I haven't played a video game in 20 years. He goes, "Perfect, you're the guy." And I go, "Really?" He's like, "Well, you put an electric car company in Saudi Arabia where gas is cheaper than water, so you'll figure it out." Over the course of a couple of years, we've been developing new partnerships. One of the partnerships we announced earlier this year was with BMW. Mike has a long, extensive history working with BMW, launching the i-Series and so on and so forth. I can let him explain that. But we started working together on that campaign, and we've been working together on a few other campaigns that we can show you today. So that's a little bit about me, hopefully in a short amount of time.
Yeah, so my background is a bit easier. So I worked basically the last 20 years in advertising out of Hamburg, as you might realize from my little accent. I was working out of Hamburg, but very internationally, on a couple of global accounts like BMW. I worked for Google a lot, worked for Heineken in Amsterdam. And basically the BMW work for more than 11 years made me realize sooner or later that something is substantially wrong with the system we are in. And I looked into that and found, like, actually there's something much more to be done, really substantial new structures and collaborations. And so I quit my job, left everything behind, took my family, moved to LA 3 years ago, founded my own company, Moon to Mars, and thought, let's look for the next bigger thing. So everybody been to the moon, so time to go on from there. And yeah, last year we were introduced, a bit more than a year ago, and ever since, have the big pleasure to work very closely with Jordan and Cloud9 on a couple of projects. You'll see one or two today of things we've done, but I think in general we just share very much the same belief system in how good partnership and a good sponsorship should be built and how this could be different today than it was or it still is in most other industries.
Great segue. Let's talk a little bit about what a great brand partnership is and how you feel like it has evolved and improved.
Sure. You know, I would say we're not reinventing the wheel here. I mean, our goal at Cloud9 is to tell great stories. How can we, and if we can tell a great story, we can relate to our audience. Everybody likes to use the word authenticity, and I'm much more a fan of connection, building a connection with your audience, because if you can build a connection and evoke emotion, then you can create that call to action. And at the end of the day, that's what we're all here to do, is to create that call to action, to have our fandom build a relationship with our partners. So when we initially set out to work with partners, we look to say, okay, what's the deep story we can tell, and then utilize some of our players, if you will, or ambassadors to help communicate that message.
And I think I would add to this, I mean, that's what for me is so most intriguing about working in esports is that actually there is a big need to talking about this connection to the people, you have to build a much more honest relationship, because you get away with this in other industries. So if you do a commercial with Cristiano Ronaldo and he just puts a piece of butter into the camera and says the best butter you will ever taste, so you get away with it because it's simply an icon. He's not a real person, right? So he's this guy that nobody knows if he's really existing or some AI robot or whatever. So if you do this with Sneaky from Cloud9, he's a real, real person and people know him for real. So there's a much more intimate, much more sensitive relationship with the player, with the audience, the fans. It's super direct, and therefore you need to be, you have to develop different collaborations, and they have to connect on a much more authentic level than you get away with this in a lot of other industries. So that's for me, that's why esports is so interesting at the moment, because it's quite unique.
Our fans are really smart. They're acutely aware of when smoke's being blown. And so you only get one chance to make a first impression. I know I feel like that's my mom telling me when I went to my first dance. It keeps resonating over and over for the last 35 years or what have you, since Cotillion, whatever that was. But it's true. So when we identify what we want to do, we just got to make sure it's done in a way that's subtly right.
So how do athletes as influencers factor into the campaigns? And do you have any best practices with working with these kinds of influencers?
No, I think it's very much the same thing. So you have to, so these athletes play a crucial role in this, because they are the epicenter, for me, of this esports world. So this is what fans really relate to at the moment. It's not really the league, it's not the game in a certain way. It is really the individual people behind it. And that is the beauty of this industry, that you have the ability to connect to the individual people. And so, what we said before, you have to find a way to really embed them in a narrative and find a story and find a foundation for your messaging that is really authentic. And here's the other big piece, talking back to your first question about what makes a great partnership in this, is when it's honest and also beneficial to both parties. And if there's a real purpose and a real value behind it, and this definitely needs to be something different than just money transfer. So, because that's, to Jordan's point, there's such a sensitive audience out there, and they immediately, there's an immediate pushback if that's a story that it's just, here's a money transfer, and that's why here's a piece of butter, and it's just the best butter you've ever seen.
And going to that point of honesty and going to the point of the butter, I think we approach each partnership with a clean slate. No two partnerships are the same. I mean, and where that's clearly evident is, you know, we did this collaboration with BMW, and we were able to create or identify what was important to them. I mean, you would first think, oh, BMW, Ultimate Driving Machine, one of the premier brands in the world, and Cloud9, arguably one of the biggest esports organizations. That's an easy slam dunk. But, you know, we don't want to do easy, per se. We want to elevate the bar. So we looked inside and said, okay, what does it mean to be on Cloud9? You know, what does it mean to be part of the organization? What we came up with is, you know, our foundation is built on strong character. You know, it started with, you know, Jack, our founder. He's got one of the strongest characters of anybody we've met, but he instills that into the players, all 70 or so of the organizations. And character is, you know, the way you treat people, the diversity, the inclusivity. You know, we have over, you know, five of our managers are female. We have a lot of, you know, diversity within the organization. But it also, as you can see there, it's also fun. You know, we're known as the meme organization. You know, memes, you know, Sneaky and cosplay, that's fun. Sneaky's a character, right? Arguably. And then on the conviction side, it's how you, you know, approach adversity and persevere. You know, we haven't won an LCS split in 7 years, but we've been in Worlds for 7 years in a row. So it's, how do you overcome that adversity to push through? And so we kind of captured the essence of, hey, we've got strong character, and you know, BMW is all about performance. So if we can connect the two, we can create something really unique, and that's what we were able to do. And Mike was really involved in helping develop that narrative on behalf of BMW, and we were really fortunate to the outcome. I don't know if some of you have seen some of the output, but the first campaign we did was with Aspen, and the story we told was her story, what she felt. You know, she's an aspiring pro player. She thinks she's going to be the best in the world. It's something that everybody can relate to. Mm-hmm. Whether
you're,
you want to
take a look at the video?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we can show it.
We're going to dim the lights so you can see how awesome it is.
Do you know who I am? I am the best player this game has ever seen. I am strong, fast, agile, fearless. I'm becoming immune to pressure, toxicity. This is not about the size of my muscles. It's all about the size of my will. I am the best player this game has ever seen. Just not yet.
Yes.
That's nice, right? It's really, especially the end there when you see her ranking. Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, 249 and 245 when the day after. No, but I think the remarkable thing here was, I mean, if you think about this on paper, and then you think about a very, very conservative German automaker, and then you go there and pitch an idea of what if we put the most expensive car we have in front of a 17-year-old girl that doesn't even have a driving license, so, and then you try to apply this butter thing again and say she's so convinced that this is the best car that was ever built. It's like, so that story doesn't go very far. So that was really the thing. And that's why we try to really push it to the max. And you will see one other piece that it's really very obvious. It is not about that. It is totally not about any player in form of testimonial. So asking about what's the role of the player is definitely not that. It's just really find an authentic common ground for both brands to make a statement. And the statement here was the common belief from both brands mutually that it's character and it's really conviction that builds power, performance, and that's where this comes from. And so for us, this was a good expression of that, and really to the max with Aspen, who is really not one of the most known players in the Cloud9 roster, but for this, it was just really perfect. And
yeah, no, I mean, it kind of hit home, and it resonated to me. My wife watched this, and she turned to me. She's a chocolatier. She makes a candy for anybody that knows me. They know I talk about my wife's chocolate and all that. So, bonbar.com if anybody's watching.
Samples.
What?
You got samples?
I do. Well, soon. They're Bloomingdale's, Neiman Marcus, hopefully Costco in the fall, in the spring. But she looked at this. She's like, that was me. I mean, she didn't play video games, but she wanted to be the best chocolate maker when she was a kid because her mom owned a chocolate shop. So, whether it's video games or lacrosse or basketball or sailing, everybody can connect to a point in their life when they thought they were the best at something or they wanted to be the best at something. And that's how we knew this campaign resonated, is because we had people talking about the fact that, oh, I get that. I can relate to that. So that's what's exciting for us.
Jordan, how does this feel like Cloud9 to you? Why the partnership? What does it say about the brand? Why did it kind of make sense?
You know, the idea that you can become anything you want to be, I mean, you'll see later, it just Sneaky does that on a Tuesday afternoon. He becomes whoever he wants to be with his cosplay. But the idea, the empowerment that we can provide to our players, to our fans, that's a big part of who we are as an organization. I mean, when people talk that Cloud9 is about one big family because we support each other, and that really resonated as we were developing this. And it will continue to speak to future partnerships outside of outside of Puma, outside of BMW. Slight reveal there. But it's all about empowering individuality and letting people be who they want to be, regardless of what the outside circumstances are.
Do you
want to
show the other video?
Yeah,
we
can.
We want to preface. Yeah, you preface.
So yeah, then there was obviously we tried to make one also with Sneaky in BMW, and then.
Can you talk about Sneaky a little bit for people who don't know?
Oh, sure. So Sneaky's been with the organization since the start. I would say he's probably one of the most popular esports athletes in the world. He's got a unique character to him. And, you know, one day, I don't know how long ago, but he decided to cosplay, and it just snowballed to this phenomenon where he's, I would imagine, one of the most famous cosplayers in the world. But it's just a different side of who he is. His fans love it. He's built a specific fandom about it, and he's just a great guy. And he really dug the idea about what we were trying to do here. So we were really excited to work with him. And one thing, if you guys watch the video, it's online, so you don't have to record it on your phone. There's a better version on YouTube.
Yeah, so for us, including and implementing Sneaky in this was literally about that. We have to go all in, and there's no way. And you bet the 17-year-old girl was a discussion in Munich, but having Sneaky in cosplay was a different level of discussion. So, but again, there was no way around it. And also other things you wouldn't have realized. So yeah, definitely there's a better version of it. If you think about voiceover qualities and all this, but these are the real players. These are their voices. And again, there was also no discussion. That's what it is. So this is how these people sound. This is their original voice, original narrative, their story. So we're not going to polish it over with something just to make it sound better or whatever. So yeah, let's see what Sneaky has to say.
There's no such thing as equality in sports. No performance is equal to another. Sports need diversity. There are infinite ways to play a game. Different performances, different skills, tactics, goals, strategies. My fast is not your fast. My performance looks nothing like yours. Even my fans definitely do not look like yours. The world's best may share a similar mindset, but the strength of their performance is not rooted in the strength of their muscles.
So I could tell you when we came up with this idea and we went to BMW and said we want to do this, they said yes until they saw the last scene in the last page. And then it was a hard no. And it was a hard no even when we shot it and we kept it in the bag. And then finally they let us release it. And then last week they're like, oh my God, it was amazing. I'm so glad we did this. All the positive feedback. It's funny because I think they really didn't understand our fan base and how endearing it was to them, because it really made the fans felt validated by a major, you know, brand. And that was really special. And what was kind of cool was, like, when we announced the partnership, we actually got fans who would email us. Obviously, there was a lot of chatter. Oh, is there a Cloud9 car coming out? And so on and so forth. But fans actually bought BMWs, sent us pictures with their BMWs in their Cloud9 jerseys, and that was great. I mean, that was an ultimate cherry on top of the fact that we could tell these stories and actually, you know, give fans the validation that, hey, listen, what they do is real world is right there with you.
Mike? Anything to say about the video? How did you convince them if it was a hard no, and then finally?
There was no conviction. You can't convince them, so we just ignored it. And we just kept going, and they were looking for an edit. And I don't know how many times they yelled at us and say, I told you, it cannot be. And so I was like, yeah, sorry,
the trick
must
is
be.
We just gave them the wrong email address. Jordan@cloud9.com. went to a mattress factory.
It was really, I mean, it took us more than 9 months, I would say, to turn them around, and stubbornly resisting, and this is the right thing to do. And we had all other alternative versions, which we theoretically have. We never showed them. So, and there's no other way than doing this. And over time, I mean, that was the point. We released Aspen first, and there was such a success, actually. That's my little side story, little insight we can share about the March 8th, actually, and what happened. So there was success before this decision was really due. So suddenly there was some room, so some trust. Now, the funny thing was, we developed the first film for specifically March 8th, International Women's Day, and we wanted to release Aspen on that day. And BMW North America decided to release on that day a different film, so a very traditional advertising piece, I would say, with a woman being a race driver. It's all fantastic. And on that particular day, because we're not allowed to launch the same day, so we had to launch later. So they wanted to avoid any kind of conflict. So Jordan decided then, we just launched this photo that you've seen of the people sitting in front of it with Sneaky and cosplay. The photo alone outperformed in terms of engagement this whole $500,000 production by a factor 10. So, and that was a photo that was long before we launched anything, so it was just the announcement of this. So, and that's just to the point of a good partnership and a good collaboration has so much more power, even for the brand side, than whatever me personally have done 20 years before every day. So, but that was a good proof point. So there was some impact and some success, so we had some room.
Yeah, it was definitely fun. There was a little bit of gloating. What can you do?
Well, you have to, so they'll say yes next time.
Yeah, no, it's fun, but it's, you know, moving forward, success breeds success. So I believe we are ecstatic about the relationship, and we're hoping to further build and solidify it on the future. Hopefully more things to come soon.
Do you guys want to talk a little bit about what you're currently working on?
Sure. We announced a great partnership earlier this year with a specific apparel partner, Puma, a long-term relationship. And part of that relationship was obviously developing a new line of apparel. And so when we kind of identified what that was, we looked internally to see, okay, who are we and how can we further expand who we are to overcome the celebrity and the success of traditional sports franchises to help build their brand. I mean, if you look at traditional sports franchises, they don't really have a brand. They have moments in time that are successful that are linked with maybe a branding campaign. You can go all the way back to the Bronx Bombers, the Yankees, Big Red Machine, Showtime, the Lakers. If the Lakers didn't win all those championships in the 80s, and they just scored a lot of points, they would have been the Denver Nuggets. No offense to anybody from Denver here, but that's the way it is. But all those things were linked to success, which led to having celebrity and the branding that came from that celebrity. But what we're trying to do is, you know, transcend that and build a campaign that's based on an idea which is built on the foundation of who we are. And we're not going to give you the campaign today or even tell you what the identity is, but we will, in due time, in the next few weeks, you'll see more about it. But we do have a little a clip, if you will, a trailer that'll probably drop in a few weeks that will tease the campaign. We would hope and ask that you don't film this, just because we'd like to release this, but we are excited that you guys that came to hear us talk could see a little bit of what we're working on.
I think the core, what we can say about it is, what's quite interesting about this campaign as Jordan just said, so the goal is literally to go beyond any kind of individual player, individual celebrity, individual success in any moment in time, and really create a stable branding for Cloud9 and a brand identity and a value system there. But the way to do it was, in this particular sense, by really portraying a lot of different players under one common umbrella idea that you will see then in a few weeks. But it's really also here, the goal was to have stories that are really, really deeply embedded in the individual biography, and not just one or two of those, so but really more than a dozen different players in the very end, really a different individual story, individual biography. And here's a very short summary of how all this kind of looks.
More. Couple weeks, right?
Yeah, it'll evolve over time. There's some cool stuff in there.
Yeah, samples.
Some cool merch.
Yeah, samples.
Samples, right? We use it to wipe the chocolate off your face, right? Yeah. So you buy more samples.
It's a cyclical business.
Jack owns a piece of both companies.
Do you guys have any questions? You can probably just we can hear you.
Okay. When approaching a brand to try to create a sponsorship or partnership, do you have any advice? And then how important is it to ask for money in a sponsorship or partnership?
That's not free.
I think money is the last thing that I talk about in a partnership. When we try and construct what we want to do, it's more of a collaboration. And you know, Puma and BMW are just two examples, obviously completely different. You know, BMW is its own story. Puma is its own story. The great thing about this, like I said, is everything starts from a fresh slate. And sometimes it's not always about selling a product. A great example of that is, you know, we work with Microsoft. And they are building some amazing technology, don't tell our competitors, to help us win, right? And if we win, that's better for our other partners, it's better for our investors, it's better for the team. But it's about changing the norm. And so when we talked to them, it wasn't about, okay, how much do you want to pay us? What's the logo place on the jersey? That's the last thing. It's, okay, let's flesh out what exactly we want to accomplish. And if we can accomplish those things, there's value there. And the money will take care of itself. But I would recommend when you develop any type of partnership, identify what you want to accomplish, what the success looks like, and then back in from there. And once you figure all that out, and you get everybody's buy-in, I want to accomplish these X amount of things, everybody kind of agrees on the financial consideration, because everything costs something. There is some, you know, there's some cost to this, there's some cost to building technology, whatever it is. So I would just try and map out what it is you want to accomplish before you even approach the financial consideration. Otherwise, you're not going to be successful, in my opinion.
And even, I think, on top of that, go in with the biggest confidence, because specifically in esports, you have what they totally don't have, and that is a genuine interest in a topic. So, and there's no need to buy interest with crazy amounts of media budgets. So, and that is in the regular equation, you're talking about 5% goes into the production, the other 95% go into buying some interest. So take this 95% and convert it into your contract with them. So, and then you can go in with the biggest confidence, because you never had that, hit that media numbers with no collaboration there is today. So.
So I was going to ask a different question, but how do you support yourself as you're getting from concept to yes? Because that's an expensive process. But then you just might get a different element, which is the client happy to just say, oh, we're used to paying 5% for production and creative. Well, we're happy to give you another 30% because we're saving it in the end.
Yeah. I mean, I think the honest answer is probably on 30%, but
I just made that number up.
No, no, but no, I think you can definitely have these conversations. I mean, honestly, with more or less all the collaboration we worked on, it was there was a given budget in the beginning. And once we started developing this, there was never the budget we ended with. So, because we realized over time the value of what this could be and also the power this could generate out of itself, so without activating it. And
I mean, similarly to making a film, you go in with the best intentions. This is the script we want to shoot. This is the script we shot. This is what we edited, and this is what came out. So, like, if you take that analogy towards a partnership, I mean, yes, it takes time to develop. The BMW conversation started in, it started in February, then there was a dormant period, then it picked up in June, and it culminated at the end of last year, and then you didn't see a product until March, which actually is the best way to work, in my opinion. In esports, you know, we're lucky, we have an LCS team. If we, in historically closed partnerships, December 27th for a January 3rd printing and a January 10th announcement for the LCS spring split. This year, because we work with Puma and they are printing all our jerseys, we're putting a hard stop. You know, they asked us to do it in June, but it's going to be sooner. It's going to be a little bit later than that. But we might not make an. We might lock in something today that we might not make an announcement for till January or February because you have all that planning time. So that potentially answers that question.
How are you measuring reach and also efficiency? So, I mean, videos are great, authentic stories, absolutely amazing. But are you talking with the client about how many impressions this is delivering, how many views this is delivering, and how are you measuring that efficiency on the back end? Sure. Like,
so every partnership is different, number one. We tend to stay away from performance marketing opportunities. There are organizations out there that are very strong in that right. That's not what we aspire to do. And I think those performance marketing opportunities usually connect with products, and we tend to work with brands, if you will, to elevate the brand because the brand wants to come into the space. And the brands that we work with, a lot of the times, aren't, you know, we have metrics in place. We have to serve so many impressions. We give brand lift studies and all of those KPIs. But their goal is in 10 years, when BMW is competing with Uber on-demand, you know, I'm making this up. I don't know if this exists. But, like, the messaging that starts today ends then. I mean, I like to think of it as, you know, I played baseball, started when I was really young. I was 6 years old. My first baseball glove was a Heart of the Hide, Rawlings, just a beautiful glove. I remember today. I put the softball in it, the twine, ran it, used my grandfather's 1980 maroon Cadillac Seville to drive over the glove to build that pocket. You know, as I was going through elementary school and high school, and even when I was on the beer softball team in college, I never bought another glove other than Rawlings. And so what we're trying to do with brands today is they want to, like, hold on to that Rawlings principle, as I like to call it. It's build that identity, build that connection at that young age, and then it resonates for a longer period of time. And we're seeing that. I mean, we got pretty instant gratification when people sent us photos of their new cars. Obviously, BMW loved that, but it's they understand it's going to take time.
When you enter into partnerships like these with bigger players, do you have to educate, like, your team members on what they can or can't post, if they can't post, like, a different shoe brand or a different car brand? Or when you start getting into, like, the competing, is that like a lifestyle cultural change that they have to go through?
We're very fortunate. We've had some really great players, and they've been pretty quick on the uptake on what's appropriate. And in the past, you know, we've been unlucky. We've had some players that have posted some inappropriate things, and they were off the organization before the partner even had a chance to call us. So, I mean, the partner wasn't going to tell us to throw them off, but they were very satisfied with that. So, you know, we've been very lucky. in that sense today. And it's to the point that our players have those characteristics that we talked about earlier, strong character, conviction, that they kind of understand what's appropriate, and they understand how it benefits their personal brand too.
You mentioned the Rawls principle, right?
Yeah.
And
sorry, it's a thing to me, but whatever.
But like from a perspective of trying to pitch to such a big brand like that, you know, there's a good bit of sales that you need to do to kind of convince them of that. Was it simple for BMW to kind of adopt this as like a mentality of yes, we should follow this, or did it take a lot of storytelling to kind of get to that point?
I think they want to connect with our audience. Before they can connect with our audience, we have to connect with them. And if we can connect with them, they probably have the confidence that we can convince someone who is a German company with over 100 years of heritage to take a risk on what we did. I don't think if you asked someone at BMW 30 years ago, first of all, they wouldn't know what cosplay is, but if you described what cosplay is, that wouldn't be something that they would even, we could finish the conversation because the door would be shut as they walked out.
30 months ago, certainly.
Yeah.
Other questions? I have a quick one for you, Jordan. Since you come from the traditional sports space, can you talk a little bit about, the transition coming to esports and sort of things that you learned? Because a lot of people at this conference are probably looking to make that transition.
It's so funny you say that. When I started at ESPN, I thought I was the biggest sports nut. And I walked in the door, and I knew nothing. Yeah, sure, I had a fantasy team, but these guys knew so much more about all statistics that I had no idea about. But the storytelling, the opportunity to learn how to tell a story there, was amazing, and the people I learned from there were pretty incredible. So when I got to esports and I didn't know what award was, or a baron, other than someone that lived in Europe, I would say that It gave me the confidence that I kind of had been there before, but that there was a way to cut through. It's almost like when you meet someone that doesn't speak your language, you can always figure out how to connect with them over, for instance, a Red Bull or a BMW or some Puma. I'll leave you with that.
Mike, do you have any thoughts about? Oh, okay.
Sorry, that was a great lead for this question. That is, did you ever feel a need to learn that language in order to get enough cred to work with?
So I learn. I'm learning every day, and I'm getting credit every day. I think it was at we were in playoffs or something. I was in the dugout where we watch League of Legends. I was like, oh my God, we got a 20-minute Baron, and literally everything dropped. No one was watching the screen. Everybody looked around. Wait, what did he say?
Who said that?
Right? Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that's the answer to that.
So it's possible to learn on the job as long as you bring other skills with you.
Yeah, I would say. I mean, so the joke I told Jack and Dan, who are obviously two of the executives of the company, I said, so once we get all this done, Q4, all I'm doing is playing games.
Other questions? Got one over here?
Do you still have the same glove?
Good one.
It's not as big, but my daughter wears it, and she, like, it comes off in her hand. Like, she's small, but it's not as in great condition, but it's there.
Last week it had mold on it.
Yeah.
I dug it out in the trash.
But it's like that blanket that you have, right? Yeah, so anyway, so if anybody did play baseball, we can always replace it. It could be the Zildjian principle, or if you're a little bit more sophisticated, the Steinway principle, whatever that connection was when you were a kid. That's what we're hoping to grasp onto.
Mike, you're more on the creative side, but you've worked with both esports and regular sports, traditional, regular, whatever. How about you? Are there some differences there?
No, I mean, very currently we're working with the UEFA, which is a big football organization in Switzerland. And so they are basically also, not also, but they are really, really facing a substantial breakdown, if you want, because they realize that their whole sponsoring model, which is totally in a different universe in terms of financial deals, etc., but again,
several more commas.
Yes, and but what they realize, and much too late actually, so there's a real need now, is that all their sponsorships are based on simple money transfers. So there is whoever pays more money gets it, and then you have the most absurd construction. My favorite example is, football is really a very patriotic, very energetic thing in Europe. South America, something starts here, but then you have a club like FC Barcelona, and there's only one other big club in Spain, that's Madrid, and then your main partner becomes, and we're really talking about a very political, cultural, totally charged situation. There's Catalan wants to be independent, Barcelona being the center of all this.